Back in the last century, at the start of my career, I signed a two-book deal with Piatkis, along with Midnight at Barney Thompson plus one other, entirely due to my own foolishness and lack of imagination, but mostly foolishness. That second book became the second Barney Thompson novel, so when it came to signing a deal for the third book with a publisher, they wanted another Barney. I was working in an office back in those days with a young family, so I didn't have a huge amount of time to write. I agreed a weekend with my wife, and she whisked the kids off. Or maybe it was just the one kid and she was pregnant with the other. I'll leave those specific details to my official biographer. And I stayed at home to start the book. I sat down on a Saturday morning and stared at the blank screen. I had nothing. There were a few books lined up in the desk. One of these was the screenplay to My Name is Joe. The line, "My name is Barney," appeared in my head. And at that moment, the idea formed that Barney could join a Murderers Anonymous group. And there was the book. I think I wrote 16,000 words over the weekend and we were off. Now, 20-something years later, I know it's far too long. 104,000 words. I could easily cut 25,000 from that if I were to edit it. Should have done that at the time, but there we are. In the original draft, I took a bit of a scorched earth approach and killed just about everybody at the end of the book. My editor, who wasn't the same editor who had taken me on and I always thought was never really bothered about the series, asked that I spare some people. She was happy enough for Barney to die, though, content to see the back of him. The same editor was consequently and unsurprisingly not particularly interested when Barney turned out not to be dead after all. Here, then, a couple of scenes from A Prayer for Barney Thompson. My name's Barney, and I'm a murderer. There was a busy reception desk, two officers behind the counter going about their business, 14 or 15 various members of the public, from concerned parents to assorted criminal element on the other side, awaiting their turn. The man in the green jumper and purple Teflon CNA slacks had finally reached the front of the queue after an hour and a half. This was a man who was used to waiting. Time meant very little to him, so he'd sat and listened to the problems of others, while watching the occasional drama unfold. He was unsure if he was doing the right thing, but it would rid him of his nightmares, and it had to be done. The desk sergeant continued to write slowly, the laggard movements of the pen betraying a slight trembling of the fingers. After a while, he lifted his head and looked at the middle-aged man 2 yards across the counter. There was a discernible twitch in the sergeant's eye. His lips drifted between a sneer and a smile, a vein throbbing his forehead, another in his neck. He needed a cigarette. He deliberately put down the pen, then leant forward, the palms of his hands flattened in the desktop. His head twitched. "Barney?" "Aye," said the man in green. "Barney. You don't mean Barney Thompson?" said the sergeant. A glimmer of a smile came to the man's lips, but it died quickly, as did all his smiles this past year or so. "Aye, Barney Thompson. Suppose you'll have heard all about me." The desk sergeant nodded. "Oh, aye, man. Everyone knows all about you. It'll be you who killed your two work colleagues in the barber shop, disposed of the bodies of your murder's victims, and may or may not, depending on your point of view, have had something to do with the murder of 33 monks in the monastery in Sutherland about a year ago. Am I right?" "Aye, aye," said the man in purple Teflon breeks. "That's me. Mind you, I definitely didn't kill any of the idiots in the monastery. I was there, right enough, but it wasn't me that did it. Apart from the real murderer, of course. I killed him." "Aye, of course," said the sergeant. He went silent, fixing the man with a disconcerting stare. He didn't move a muscle, his eyes burrowing into him like a jackhammer into cheese. The silence continued. "What?" said the man eventually, beginning to feel unnerved, the strength of his conviction disarmed. The sergeant raised himself up to his full height, some 7 or 8 feet, then continued his stare from on high. Finally, he pointed a finger back into the depths of reception at another younger man sitting on a bench, a man with Elvis sideboards and hair that required cutting by an experienced barber. "See that wee guy sitting over there?" he said, and the man in green nodded. He'd noticed them earlier. Sideboards Elvis had been sitting there since he'd arrived. "Funny thing is," continued the desk sergeant, "that he's Barney Thompson and all. And strangely enough, if it isn't just the kind of coincidence to make you want to slash your wrists in astonishment. But there's another Barney Thompson back here getting interviewed as we speak." he finished, raising his eyebrows as he did so. What do you mean? What do you think I mean, heed the ball? Are you that stupid, wee man? You're the fifth Barney Thompson we've had in here today. Yesterday we had a couple. The day before that we had seven. Two of them were Nigerians. The desk sergeant continued to stare across the divide. The man in Teflon wilted. You getting the picture yet, wee man? In the past year we've had nearly 1,000 Barney Thompsons giving themselves up. There isn't a stupid bastard out there who doesn't want to be Barney Thompson. They're sheep. Think they're Barney Thompson. My mother thinks she's Barney Thompson. And now it's just over a week before Christmas, so even more of you sad bastards are crawling out of the woodwork. But I am Barney Thompson. I really am. Fine. You want to be Barney Thompson? Fine by me. You can show some ID. The man in Teflon patted his empty pockets. The shoulders slowly shrugged at the even more contemptuous look, winging its way across the counter in his direction. Don't have any, he said eventually. Very, very small voice. You don't have any. That's not much bloody good, is it, wee man? Could have made a bit of an effort. Even the saddest bastards who come in here make at least a token attempt. Last week we had a wee 75-year-old woman saying she was Barney Thompson. But at least she'd made the effort to score the name out in her blockbuster video card and write Barney bloody Thompson in crayon across the top. Initiative, you see, he added, prodding his head with his forefinger. But I'm Barney Thompson. I've just been away, you know. Where am I going to get an ID? The desk sergeant folded his arms across the Wyoming-esque expanses of his chest, delved back into his hard stare for a second or two, then shook his head. Very well, Mr. Thompson. Have it your way. If you'd just like to take a seat, I'll try and get down to see you sometime before I die. I'm promising nothing. All right, said the man. Right. And so, as the desk sergeant turned his attention to another man who'd been waiting some amount of time, a man with a duffel bag full of light armour over his shoulder, Barney Thompson, the genuine Barney Thompson among 1,000 impostors, turned and walked out of Maryhill Police Station and back onto the streets of Glasgow. The afternoon, the 17th day in December, a robin or a bell or a ball behind the door in the advent calendar, a dark chocolate turned white, still mild and grey, no sign of winter. As Socrates McCartney told all, Barney Thompson stood on a pavement, staring across a busy road at a small barber shop. He didn't know how long he stood there. People came and went around him, some bumped into him, some told him to move, most passed on by and noticed nothing. Grey lives and a grey day, no one with time for anyone else. This was life in the new millennium. But Barney felt the beating of his heart and an unexpected dryness at the back of his throat. A barber's shop. It's now almost a year since he picked up a pair of scissors in anger. He carried them around with him all this time, but he'd been traumatised. No question of that. The shock of the unremitting murder and mutilation had had its effect. It was many months since he even thought of barber, he never mind attempted to practice it. Yet here he was, standing no more than 15 yards from a shop. He could smell it. Shampoo, the hair oil, the warm air from the dryer, the hair itself. Dirty sometimes, clean others, but never odourless. And he stared at the small sign in the window, which he passed by an eternity ago. Help wanted. Experience preferred. Help to do what? Sweep up, make tea, wash hair, cut hair? He didn't know. But whatever it was working in a barber shop. Back where he belonged, in that land of giants. His head was a swirl of his past and his future. The years in Henderson's before he'd accidentally killed his colleagues. The few days haircutting at the monastery before he'd become implicated in another serial killer's murders. Great haircuts he'd given, disasters for which he was to blame. For ever the magnificent Lloyd George 23, there'd been a deep impact of an Ally McCoy Swirl Cup 98. He'd given haircuts with which a king would have been content. He'd also dealt enough stinkers to fill several series of Ally McBeal lawsuits. And he knew not what his life held for him. For every decision he made, he found thrown back in his face. He would walk the earth, yet he could not face it. He would hand himself in, yet the police would not take him. He would go and see his wife, yet she had moved, leaving no forwarding address. What remained? So he stood looking across at the small shop that perhaps held his salvation. He didn't know what had led him to Greenock. just looking around for somewhere cheap to stay. Seen an advert in the paper, thought he might as well give it a go beside cold Clyde. And now, settled in his bedsit above a baker's, he'd wandered up the street and almost immediately stumbled across the advert in the shop window. Help wanted. Could be his very own motto. And no doubt fate was playing its hand. There was a gap in the traffic and he took the plunge. Across the road, didn't stop to think, straight into the shop. He would not be kept waiting, for they'd yet to see anyone come or go in all the time he'd been watching. He closed the door behind him, took a moment to breathe in the surroundings. A small, thin room, two barber's chairs against one wall, fronted by the requisite sinks and individual mirrors, an inconsiderable bench along the other, a couple of sad pictures on the walls, clinical in the olden days when the Clyde had bustled with activity, a lone dog on a deserted street. "Haircut," said the old man, not bothering to rise from his seat, expecting nothing, hadn't had to cut anyone's hair since 10 o'clock that morning. "Help wanted," said Barney. The old man nodded. An interesting face, something ancient and grey about it, but an uncommon vigour to him. In his 70s maybe, life in those old eyes and a face that had seen much. Grey beard, grey hair, and thin, very thin. "What can you do?" said the man. He gave Barney a long look, and there may have been the light of recognition in his eyes. "Someone who might actually know me for who I am," thought Barney, but he thought it did little to excite him. "I've cut a bit of hair in my time," he said. "I can see that, son. You've got the look. What's your name?" Barney hesitated. What if he did recognise him? Maybe he didn't want to hand himself in after all. Maybe he wanted to be free to work in a small barber shop in Greenock. Now there was ambition. "Thompson," he said. "Barney Thompson." A small smile came to the old man's face. Look in his eyes was warm. "The murderer bloke?" "Aye, I suppose." The old man stood up and laughed. "I sure you are, son," he said. "The name's Blizzard. Layman Blizzard. I reckon you're full of shite, son, but you've got the job. We'll see what you can do. Can't promise much in the way of wages, mind though. Not unless business picks up a bit." Barney looked around the shop again. Spitting sawdust, needed money spent on it, but money came from customers. "How'd you manage to stay open?" he asked. "No many overheads, you know, as you can probably see." Barney looked around and wondered why exactly was the old man needed help, except for the painting and decorating. Needed the company, maybe, and if that was all it was, then perhaps it'd be ideal. For there's no doubt that he was in need of it himself. "Do we a bit of paint," said Barney. Blizzard threw a hand into the air in a gesture of hopelessness, and now Barney really noticed his fingers, bent and gnarled. Wondered how he could possibly cut hair at all. "Which chair's mine?" he asked, after realising he was staring at the old man's hands. Blizzard shrugged. "My knee is the window, if you like. I don't care." Barney was already standing beside that chair, and he looked at it and rested his hand in the crudely covered suede headrest. Magic or fate or some benign conjuration, maybe it was all evil sorcery. He'd come in from the cold. Not only had the police turned him away, he'd walked into a barber's shop and been given the job cutting hair, been presented with a window seat. As if a higher force was at work, yet nothing had made him come to Greenock. Nothing had made him walk up the street. That was all his own accord. So it could just have been luck. The door to the shop opened. A customer, magnetically attracted by Barney, thought, in this new, contrived reality of his. He itched to once more lift the scissors in anger, but deferred to his boss. "What'll it be, mate?" asked Blizzard, as the man, Jamie Spencer, 27, going prematurely bald, married with two girlfriends, financial analyst, whatever that meant, already the worst for wear of too much alcohol, nose tending to redness, could run 100 metres in under 25 seconds, closed the door behind him. "Can you do me a Lutheran three at the back, cloistered short back and sides?" Blizzard looked at him, mouth slightly open, showing white teeth and a bit of drool. "That's a fucking haircut." "Aye, I can do that," said Barney. "Set yourself down there, mate." Of course, the last time he'd done that cut, he'd made a total hash of it. Bit of concentration and a steady nerve would see him through. Jamie Spencer eased himself into the chair nearest the window. Layman Blizzard gave Barney the nod. Smiled to himself for the old man at this sudden interruption and being immediately relegated in his own shop. But he was not one to care. Barney flexed his scissor fingers and prepared for his first haircut in nearly a year. Back in the saddle. Suddenly, from nowhere, thrust onto the stage. Once more at the helm. Returned to the Starship Enterprise. Like Spock in the first movie. Sean Connery in Never Say Never Again. Simon and Garfunkel in Central Park. The coelacanth. He was back. Thank you. I've thought of a good advert for that crap you drink, said Barney to Layman Blizzard. Blizzard downed the dregs of his neat whiskey and laid the glass back on the table. Good for you, son, he said. You can tell me about it after you've got me another. Barney shook his head. Chings, he said. I wish you'd stop drinking that stuff as if it were lager. You've had about five and then I'm still on my first pint. That's because you drink like a pussy, said Blizzard. Barney finished off the rest of his pint in one gulp as some concession to peer pressure, then handed to the bar. They were in Barney's new local, the bar that had been Blizzard's home from home for some time. The paddle steamer, 10 minutes walk from Barney's flat, where he now found himself for the third night running. Occasional game of dominoes, but mostly they sat and talked, reliving great haircuts from the past. In Blizzard's case, this consisted entirely of his insistence they'd cut Elvis's hair when he stopped at Prestwick on his way back from Germany in 1960. The story usually came in between his fifth and sixth doubles, but sometimes earlier. Barney hadn't heard it yet that evening. It was due. Pint of tenants and a double for Layman, said Barney, and the barman nodded and went about his business. Barney looked round the bar as he waited. Saw the same old faces. Only the third night and already it was as familiar as anything he'd ever known. Faded wallpaper, the one-armed bandits unchanged in the corner since time began, old Jack the barman and the occasional barwoman Lolita. This was his new life. If it already seemed mundane and overly familiar after three evenings, what would it be like after a few years, a decade or worse? Would he still be here when he was 85, telling some younger man in the bar how he'd once cut Billy Connolly's hair before he'd become famous? He exchanged money and drinks and headed back to the table. Blizzard was leering unattractively at a woman 50 years his junior at a nearby table. Stop that, Layman. You're frightening her. Bollocks, she fancies me. Aye, in your dreams, old man. Blizzard downed half the drink in one, then laid the glass on the table. Right then, son. Tell us about this brilliant advert you've got. Though I don't know why you're telling me, because it's no as if any bastard needs to persuade me to buy it. Right, said Barney, here we go. The Teletubbies are driving along the road in a motor, right? Who the fuck are the Teletubbies? You know, the stupid bastards in the telly, four big fat bastards of different colours and all that. One of the blokes has got a handbag. A handbag? A big fat funny coloured bloke with a handbag? What kind of shite are you watching on the telly anyway? Hell, my bob, Layman, every bastard's heard of the Teletubbies. Anyway, they're all driving along in the motor, when all of a sudden, they hit something in the middle of the road and they crash. They hit what? What kind of thing are you just going to get in the middle of the road? I don't know, something, a pheasant, some shit like that. You really think you're necessarily going to crash just because you hit a pheasant? Fuck, all right then. They hit a lamppost. Is that better? A lamppost? In the middle of the road? Where the fuck are these people? God, Layman, you're a cantankerous old bastard. Right, a bloody huge dog runs out in front of them. They swerve to avoid it, and they hit a lamppost at the side of the road. How's that? That seems plausible. Don't think that's going to sell you much whiskey, though, is it? What's your slogan going to be? To think this shite and you might crash your motor and die? That's brilliant, son. I think you might stick to your day job. They haven't been drinking yet. So why did they crash the motor? Because of the fucking dog. Oh, aye, right enough. Right, on you go. There's these four weird-looking bastards with handbags and a motor. To avoid hitting a dog, they drive into a lamppost. Got you. What happens next? Blizzard finished off his sixth double whiskey of the night. Right, they all die except the wee one. The red one, you know. The red one. One of them's red. Aye, and she doesn't die. She? I thought we were all blokes. No, there's a couple of blokes and a couple of birds. So it's one of the birds who's got the handbag. Nothing wrong with that, son. You made it sound sinful. No, it's one of the blokes who's got the handbag. How come? I don't know. Bloody hell, Layman, let me finish. So they're all dead, right? I thought the red one wasn't dead. Aye, right. They're all dead except the red one. Right? Right, but I think you better get to the point because I'm beginning to think you're talking a load of shite. Right. We switched a couple of months later and the wee bastard's sitting in a bar quaffing double whiskies, pissed out her socks, and she keeps down the doubles in a winner. Then she slams her glass down in the bar and says to the barman, again, again. Again, again. Blizzard stared across the table, looking a bit bemused. There was a loud cheer from around the dartboard, a sound of lager filling the glass from a malfunctioning tap. The woman Blizzard had been eyeing up slapped her hand viciously into the face of the man sat across the table from her before he got up and headed to the bar. Somewhere was the vague sound of arguing over the exact consistency of Jupiter's atmosphere. What in the name of fuck are you talking about, son? Can't watch the programme, said Barney. I mean, I've only seen it a couple of times myself. Load of shite by the sounds of it. Right, son, tell you what, you wait and buy me another couple of shots. I'm going to have a go at this bird that's been giving me the eye while I shags at the bar. And if I blow out when you get back, I'll tell you about the time I cut the king's hair. Rare story, that one. Rare. Barney rose once more from his seat. Not that bloody rare, he thought to himself, as he headed off across the pub.